Welcome to our series about nurturing creative thinkers. We're discussing the role of art, not only art in itself, but also as a healing tool. And I have to confess that it is a topic that's close to my heart. I'm very pleased to welcome Kate Chand, who's the Community Arts Counselor and part of the first cohort of students in South Africa to study art therapy, which is amazing.
It is.
And you are also, we're going to be talking about your role in Lefika Lepandosa, where you manages communication and special projects. And Lefika's a NGO in Hillbrow, offering community art counseling and training, as well as a variety of art-based programs for children. So welcome, Kate. This is going to be a very, very interesting and fascinating interview.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about Lefika, what your involvement is and how that works. And maybe that's maybe a good way in.
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about the history. Lefika was founded in 1994 by Dr. Hayley Bowman, who qualified as an art therapist in the UK and came back in 94 and started working in Katlehong and in the townships and understanding the terrible trauma facing our country and that healing wouldn't be possible one-on-one. And she started exploring groups and set up Lefika as a place initially to train community art counselors. There was no art therapy training in South Africa at the time, and only this year do we have the first master's program. And so she designed a program that's kind of firmly based in art therapy theory and in using like a psychoanalytic frame, but that would be accessible to anybody who works in community with children using art. So it's a group-based approach, and matric is the entry level. So
matric is the entry level for the therapist.
For the training, yes. For the community art counseling training. So it's been around for a long time. We currently offer 3 after-school programs per day to children from Johannesburg's inner city. We're on the edge of Hillbrow, Braamfontein, and Parktown. The kids walk to Lefika. We don't recruit. They hear about us through word of mouth, and part of our approach and part of developing that sense of agency is for children to come and find us. It's almost like the first step to getting help. And so the 2 main areas of work is the after school program, and we use drama therapy and art therapy interns to run the groups as well as train community art counselors. Our community art counseling training, we received funding from the Goethe Institute last year and part of their sustainability and innovation project, and we developed a platform and have taken that training online. Mm-hmm. So we were able to relaunch it because COVID just put a stop to that training. Mm-hmm. And it's also part of not only making Lefika financially sustainable, but also making training community art counselors to go out into communities across South Africa. So we've run our first cohort of community art counselors are doing that online training, and we meet once a week on Zoom to do an experiential kind of reflective group process with them. And we attract community workers, artists, teachers. We get a lot of teachers. We get psychologists, counselors, people who just want to expand what they can offer and how they can work with their target groups. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of the work is a new clinic where we do one-on-one counseling. Mm-hmm. So although the groups are very beneficial and, we can see changes over time with the children, there are children who need one-on-one counseling, and we use our drama therapy and art therapy interns for that counseling, and also SACAP student counselors mm-hmm. to do that. My role is to, special projects is in my designation, and I manage the transition from the in-person training to the online platform, and I facilitate and help make that happen. I do communications. I'm an art therapist intern at Lafika as well. So I'm starting to see clients, and I'm running a weekly care group with the teenagers. And life is full and rich and busy.
It sounds like it. There's so many things that have come up in that kind of introduction to what Lafika does and your role in it. Let me try and tease out a couple. The first is, this series deals with creativity, and particularly creativity with children. And I'm interested because therapy is generally seen as being something that's quite dialogic and word-based. Explain a little bit about art as a way in, as a medium of therapy.
Yeah, that's a lovely question. And it just reminds me of how the children who come to Lafika say they're coming to make art. So in their minds, that's what they're coming to do. And they do come to make art. But the frame and the safe space that gets provided for them to make their art has a strong therapeutic benefit. So, you know, they're different age groups and different groups, but they happen at the same time each week. The children arrive, they get fed, they enter the space, they check in. There's always a check-in. There's a group contract. The facilitator goes through the group contract. And then the art activity, and it's drama and art, or art that takes place. And it often feels like a lot of fun. But while art is being made, the children are being witnessed and observed. And a conversation does take place with individual children about their art making, what the facilitator may be observing. Never that's a beautiful picture. It's not a compliment. It's more an observation about process, or I notice that you are, or do you want to tell me a little bit more about that, you know, blue spot in the corner? And the session ends at the same time, the group comes back together, and there may be a reflection about everybody's work, what happened, observations about everybody was very quiet in the room today, or I noticed that there was a lot of energy, whatever it might be. And then there's a group checkout, and the kids go and eat again, mm-hmm. and they leave. Mm-hmm. And this, the rhythm to the week, and then also to the session, is, I think, part of the holding and the containing, and the sense that within the space they feel safe enough to... kids who've been traumatized, and not that all the kids that we see have been traumatized, but I just think every child in South Africa, there is a certain level of continuous and ongoing...
Not any children.
Well, yeah, we deal with children, but trauma. And especially when you're navigating the streets of the inner city, you're navigating hijacked buildings, you're navigating schools that... are not nurturing safe spaces in any shape or form. You're navigating, you know, the fact that you may not have, well, that you're a refugee or an immigrant, you may not have papers. You don't have access, and life is very uncertain. And things happen between those spaces, often to children. And there's a breakdown in symbol formation when we do experience trauma. And I think the fact that the kids feel safe at Lafika, Lafika Lapidiso does mean rock of healing or holding, that they are able to take a deep breath and are able to start exploring image making. Mm. And when you create an image, it is something that's inside you that is then... on the page. And I suppose now I'm speaking more broadly about art and therapy. You are able to look at it, and you're able to start having a conversation about something that isn't inside of you. There's a little bit of a distance. You can look at it. And a lot of processing happens in the making of it, but also in the looking at it. That is about agency, that is about self-expression, that is about I did it. These are my marks, and somebody's, you know, cares enough to provide the space and to witness and to share with me my journey.
There seems to be many interesting connections between the art making and the process that you've spoken about, more so even than the product, the therapeutic process, and then the meaning making. And what it seems that you are able to unlock is the link between creating, making meaning, and allowing kids to express in a creative way, allowing in a non-judgmental and in a safe place, an opportunity for them to unlock some of the stuff that's going on inside that they may not necessarily have words for.
Yes. You're reminding me of the Clay Group, which is an art. It's not an art therapy group or a community art counseling group. It's called Art Skills. So this whole term, I've been, thinking I'm teaching the teenagers. It's a teenager group, Art Skills. Clay, you know, how to work with clay. And I had a little curriculum worked out, and we're going to do pinch parts, and I'm going to show six, you know, different decorating techniques, and then we're going to make a coil pot, and then we're going to make a box using slabs. So those are the basic hand building techniques, and it's all in my, I'm all prepared for it. And the teenagers come, and I do my little demonstrations, and I'm, you know, trying to show these different things at different times during the term, and just so aware that I'm not really sure if they're listening or terribly interested in my imparting of art skills, but they are so deeply absorbed in the process of working with the clay that they almost have no need of me to be there other than the holder and the person who's prepared the space for them to enter and now work with the clay. And it's been... And yet every now and then somebody does something and I think, oh, they were listening. You know, and they're very, very fascinated in the transformative quality of the clay, that is this earth that I'm holding actually going to be the shiny ceramic plate that I eat off at home. And we did manage to get through the whole journey of raw clay to glazed final products. And so that has delighted them, in the sense of how clay can transform, I think, has been immensely powerful. But it's just the materials are holding them. The actual clay is what's containing and holding. And
I mean, it's so fascinating, because I mean, what you've expressed, and I know how difficult it is sometimes for teenagers to be able to find the opportunity and the you've spoken about agency, but to find the medium to express some of the really profound things that are happening inside them, and respond to the world in ways that are authentic, that are authentic for them. Because art allows for truth telling. It allows for, I suppose, confession, for exposure. It gives access to some of the really deepest parts of the human psyche, and yet it can be done in a medium that is, or in a place that is so non-threatening. It's really quite a responsibility you've got.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And there's, I don't know if you've ever come across that wonderful poem by Daniel Day-Lewis, "Walking Away." Have you come across it? And I can't remember all of it, but there's one line. The poem is a story of a son and a father parting. The son is 18, and the father's thinking of all of the experiences that have led to this part, and he talks about these moments that fired our irresolute clay, as though, you know, everything kind of is molded, the whole of human experience is molded and then is fired, and that's, you know, it's part of the process of who we become. So it's a very symbolically profound thing that you're doing.
And the clay is as well. You are making me think of how they nurtured their pinch pots. Like, I felt, is anybody ever, every week, I'm like, even after they were fired, bisque fired, they still were reworking them. And as though they really struggled to let go of them. Well, number one, it seemed the care for these pinch pots. Like, they gave them such care. And it made me wonder, you know, in the environments that a lot of them come from, how much care and some personal circumstances I know, like they're not receiving care, and yet they were able to care for these pots to such an extent that they didn't want to let them go, and they didn't really want to hand them over to the kiln. And if they, you know, they wanted to keep transforming and perfecting, but were delighted, of course, when they came out.
So it's an amazing thing. So the process of creation has actually allowed them to, I suppose, find a physical manifestation of all the stuff that they've poured into it. It becomes more than a pinch pot. It becomes symbolic of their lives in some ways. That's a wonderful thing to do.
Mm.
So, Kate, if you were the Minister of Education or King of the World, Queen of the World or whatever, what would you do in the educational process that would allow for some of these kinds of healing and therapeutic and containing exercises? Do you think there's anything that we could learn that could be translated into other spaces?
I would work with the teachers. I wish that teachers could... I mean, they also need to trust more and feel safe in the spaces in which they're working, but to be really curious about, I think community art counseling is about being curious about what's coming up, being curious about the behavior of the children. If somebody's being very destructive, what are they trying to communicate? If a child is falling asleep at the table, it's not because they, you know, think you're boring. It may well be.
Well, it could be. I'm sorry to say.
It could be.
No, but it's unlucky.
Yeah, so to really be curious. Yeah. And yeah. I think making art, and if I'm just thinking about the community art counselors and the teachers who are in that program, they start understanding that the group of kids in front of them is a group. And there is, you know, the psychoanalytic kind of exchanges and those words, container, safe space, holding, transference, just, you know, being aware of the flow and that you are holding a group. And so I think curiosity, but I want to get back to the art. You know, art can be used to teach literacy. Art can be used to teach maths. Art can be used. It's a very, very strong, powerful tool that shouldn't just be for the 1 hour of, you know, art, whatever. What's it called? Creative arts or something. That subject. It needs to cut across. It just needs
interdisciplinary.
Yes, across the entire curriculum.
I know. So, but it sounds like you would make art a compulsory subject.
Yeah, well, and yet art as taught at schools can be such a damaging process. So,
say a little bit about that. It's an interesting thing.
Because it gets marked and it gets judged, and it's very tender when people. Mm. Produce mm. images. It's
yes,
a reflection
of course, that makes a lot of sense, yes.
So, and depending on the art teacher, there's a specific aesthetic or something that is the desired outcome and may not necessarily be what that child's particular strengths are. Having said that, they're gifted art teachers who, you know, can work with whatever's in the room, and then it's not. But still, a mark to art. That's.
It's a travesty.
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay, please won't you tell us about your work on the Ohumbo program?
So in my early days at Lefika, it just came to many of the community art counselors' awareness that the literacy amongst the children attending the programs was very poor, in some instances seemingly non-existent. And a call was put out for a community art counselor to volunteer and sit in. They brought in Spelling Bee. And I came and sat in and was just terribly alarmed by what I was seeing and wrote a letter to the then managing director who said, okay, so do you have something that you can offer? And at the time I was reading my husband's late wife's PhD on multimodal pedagogies in the post-apartheid classroom in South Africa. And there was a specific project that interested me because it evolved around doll making, and I work with making dolls as a healing modality. And I was reading the project, kind of, it was very synchronistic, and I said, okay, yeah, I've got something I can do. And I took what Pippa Stein had done with this group of children and primary school teachers in an informal settlement outside Joburg, and I applied it to the Lefika Open Studio Frame, which I described earlier, you know, the 1.5 hours once a week over a term. And I started with the dolls, with one, and it's the multimodal kind of approach is a series of steps that happen over, you know, a 10-week term where the children, I've started theming it because the same kids came every term. So it has a theme. We read a story that relates to that theme, a storybook. We start each session. But what they do is they create a 2D character using paint, crayons, pencils. They then make that character using a different modality. So sometimes it's clay, sometimes it's boxes, but it's a 3D sculptural form related to their character and the theme. They then do an improvisation. They then write their story, and they then bind their own books and put their story and anything they've made during the term into their book. And I mean, I ran two groups a week in 2018, a teenage group and a sort of 9 to 12-year-old group. And it was just the most extraordinary, powerful thing. We called it a literacy project. I'm now doing my master's research on it. I'm calling it a storytelling project because had school teachers who came, community art counselors who did they had to do their group hours with me. And they were like, what's this literacy project? And very taken aback by where's the phonics, where's the... and by the end of it, they couldn't believe the journey that the children had been on, and the deep processing and that took place. Sometimes, I mean, I was just like one of the kids. He came to nearly every group. The one group he missed was writing the story each term, and he even bound his books. He never wrote a story, but he absolutely told himself 100 while he was making, stitching, creating, decorating.
What seems to be impressive about all these experiences that you're talking about, the literacy project and then the art therapy, is the connection between articulating meaning and being able to make sense of the world for each kid. And sometimes for this particular kid, it doesn't seem like he needed to express it to anyone else. It was, you know, he was creating it internally. But I suppose one of the real advantages for some of the kids would be to have a chance to tell their story. You spoke earlier about being witnessed, and I suppose that's an important thing it's an important aspect of what these kids are doing.
And perhaps all kids, because we're on the edge of a very chaotic kind of inner city space.
But I mean, it just strikes me that in fact, you're talking about kids often with a history of trauma who come from a very violent, brutal, and unsettled background. But in fact, every child has a story to tell, and every child could benefit from the opportunity to make some kind of sense of the world. Because, I mean, while it is true that the kids that you're dealing with are extreme, you know, their experiences are extreme, we live in a world that you've just said is, you know, it's an unsettled, uncertain world.
And becoming more so.
Kate, it would be interesting to hear if you've got any particular stories. I mean, you spoke about this one child. Are there any stories that you think would be interesting to talk about, where you actually have had one of those moments where you think, well, you know what, life is really, this is worth living for?
Every day I go to Lefika, I feel that. A couple of weeks ago, I was facilitating a doll-making workshop at Lefika, and there's a group of teenagers who attend regularly. And one of them was trying to get my attention. I said, we just, you know, we're going to share and then I'll come to you. And I finished the workshop process and I went and found him afterwards. And he kind of called me into the clay room and he wanted to show me that he had finished his quail pot. And he'd done it all by himself. You know, it wasn't because it was clay class. It wasn't because, you know, I'd said, okay, while you're hanging around. He just, it was just that his agency to go and find the materials and work with them on his own, but also his delight that he, you know, he just, and he wanted to share it. And he'd made a beautiful pinch pot. Yeah, it was... And there are many moments like that.
So the opportunity for a child to be able to show, you know, like I suppose many mothers would have these little artworks presented, but the opportunity to share something that is intrinsically personal.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. You've spoken a lot about clay and pinch pots. Is there any one particular medium that you think works, that you think is a suitable medium for this, or do you think that art is a kind of universal opportunity to express?
So I think we can use any materials. They don't even need to be art materials. Yeah, so yeah. Found, you know, one can walk down the street and pick up bits of paper and go home and make an image with them. And in fact, very little has been written about that because I'm doing it at the moment. I'm just finding myself picking up, you know, detritus really on my morning walks, and then for studio practice in my art therapy course, creating images from them. And I'm trying to find out more about that. So there's not a lot written about that. But I have to say clay, for my own healing journey, it's a extraordinary material. It's while you're forming the clay is forming you and revealing yourself, well, reveals myself to me. It shows me my impatience still after all these years. I'm like, can I open the kiln yet? Please, can I? Or I'm going to pack the kiln even though I don't have enough stuff. And it's very tactile. So, and it's how we started with our hands on the earth. And by touching.
Something very elemental about
yes, it is. Yeah. It's elemental and it's transformative because it goes from earth to a substance that's going to last for thousands of years.
And in fact, if you think about it, it involves all the elements. You know, you've got the earth, you've got the fire in the kiln, you've got the water.
And of course, air to dry.
Exactly.
So I am watching, I mean, I teach adults clay. I have a small teaching studio, but I haven't really worked with children with clay on a regular basis. So just this past term with the teenagers, I'm like sold on it. It's they know what to do with it. I mean, adults still need, they like to be taught and they've got things in. The kids just have a confidence and and it is just a very containing substance. And it's miraculous to make something three-dimensional. You know, when you're drawing, it's one thing. And we're always so intimidated by the white page. It's anxiety-provoking. But when you've got a lump of clay, you just need to start pushing it and something starts happening.
Psychologically, there's something quite disturbing about the fact that is so malleable, is not the right word, but it is so easily transformable. But then at a point, once it's gone into the fire and it has been, it comes
it's
out
fixed.
And there's nothing you can do. And it's brittle and fragile.
Yes. They say that
there's
potters...
There's a poem in there somewhere.
They say that potters do grief really well because...
They do grief well.
Yes, because there's so much loss along the way.
Yes.
And you never know, even when your beautiful pot is finished, somebody breaks it, chips it, you're losing things, the firing goes wrong... The crack forms when it shouldn't. It's just an extraordinary way for young people to also, you know, they say you need a pet, but actually maybe you just need a lump of clay because you've got to let go of that cracked pot, that broken thing, and start again and make your next one. And if that doesn't work, again, with your next one, and so kind of surrender.
It's just such a wonderful way into the whole kind of educational process that your experience is incremental, and you build on it, and you learn. Not only do you learn the skills, but you and the techniques and things, but you actually are on a journey of process.
Yes, it's not about the outcome.
Yeah, that was really beautiful. Thank you, Kate. It was a really fascinating conversation. I loved it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fine Music Radio's Creative Teen Talk podcast series was hosted by headmaster, educator, and parent Mark Faulkner. It was produced by FMR's Vanessa Levenstein and Ewan Inglis.